This is Hidden Killers with Tony Brucey.
Lots of comparing going on right now between the Nick Reiner case and the Lindsey Clancy case. And I want to address that in this piece. Before you start repeating that, before I start repeating that, before we start taking a real good hard look at the fact that the only thing we have in common here is a level of mental illness. And that's where the two cases stop being common, stop having many comparisons. The grand jury added lying in wait to the charges against Nick Reiner. Under California law, that means prosecutors believe he concealed what he was about to do from his own parents, waited for the right moment, and then launched a surprise attack with a specific intent to kill. That allegation describes a brain that is planning and choosing. People are already comparing this case to Lindsey Clancy. Before anyone puts those two names in the same sentence, they need to look at what they're actually putting side by side. One of those people spent 17 years making choices. The other spent months losing the ability to make them. And I welcome your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in our description. That's where we'll continue our conversation here. The question isn't whether Nick Reiner's brain was broken. The question is whether a brain that chose destruction for 17 straight years suddenly stopped choosing on December 14th. Nick Reiner went to his first rehab facility around his 5th birthday. By the time, or 15th birthday, I should say, by the time he turned 22, he'd been through 17 or 18 stays. He said so himself in interviews he gave to promote a semi-autobiographical movie he co-wrote about the experience. He used heroin, cocaine, and meth. He says in a 2016 interview that he was a spoiled white rich kid from a Hollywood family and that the drugs were so powerful he didn't care about any of the privilege or money. He knew what he had, and he chose to throw it all away for the next high. When he refused to say it in treatment, he chose homelessness. That was his world. And that's what he chose. It wasn't anyone else's decision. He told an interview he'd been homeless in Maine, New Jersey, and Texas by choice. When I was out there, I could have died, he said. It's all luck. He wasn't describing a medical crisis. He was describing the consequences of a choice he made repeatedly, the choice to refuse treatment. Sources say he stopped going to recovery meetings because he called them too cultish. 18 rehab stays and 3 states of homelessness by the time he was 22 years old. Every fork in the road he took. Every single one led him further from help. Nick Reiner lived in his parents' guest house on their Brentwood property. Sources say he destroyed it more than once. That the guest house became a revolving door throughout his life. On a podcast in 2018, he laughed while describing one of those times. I got totally spun out on uppers, is what he said. I think it was coke and something else. I was up for days on end, man. Woo! He described destroying the guest house piece by piece on a drug binge, starting with the television, then the lamp, then everything else in the room. Everything in the guest house got wrecked, he said. When the host asked if the violence was a way to release tension, Nick answered in 2 words, no logic. He acknowledged his parents had told him he had to leave before the rampage. He couldn't even remember whether he'd hurt himself. Sources say he bragged about how he could get away with anything. Sources say he took money from his parents for drugs and showed no remorse. Sources say he threatened his sister when she confronted him about his behavior. His parents gave him the ultimatum again and again. Take your medication and stop using or move out. Sources say they threatened to call the police more than once, and they never did. The revolving door kept spinning. A family friend quoted in reporting after the killing said Nick's outbursts had been violent enough to require physical restraint as far back as age 11, held in bear hugs to keep him from hurting himself or others. This had been building for most of his life. Sources say Nick Reiner was diagnosed with schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder around 2020. A judge placed him under an LPS conservatorship, a court order in California that allows involuntary psychiatric treatment when a person is gravely disabled or a danger to themselves or others. Getting one requires a doctor, a licensed fiduciary, and a judge to all agree that this person can't safely manage on their own. And in California, you have to renew it every single year. And in California, the way it is set up is that, well, we can kick you off this conservatorship at basically any time you show the ability to feed yourself. The bar is so damn low. That's why you can't keep them in California. Because basically, if the person is able to pick up a fork and put food in their mouth, well, they're competent enough to not need a conservatorship anymore. That's literally the bar. The conservatorship ran from 2020 to 2021 and then ended. Nobody has publicly explained why it wasn't renewed, other than the fact that California doesn't renew them. That's why it wasn't renewed. Because unless he was in a catatonic state in the corner, shaking and not replying or responding to things, you're not going to get it renewed in California. That means for roughly 4 years before the killings, Nick Reiner was no longer under any court-ordered oversight for a diagnosis that already required the state to intervene once. Sources say his medication was changed roughly 3 to 4 weeks before the killings. The prescription had reportedly been working, was switched because of the side effects. He was gaining weight. Not like you're having psychotic delusions. Not, this really makes me not feel like, it was, I just put on a couple extra pounds. Damn. Wasn't exactly a mother trying to gain control of her faculties and the way she's able to interact with herself and the world as her body struggles to find itself again after giving birth to 3 children. Going from doctor to doctor, begging for help, begging for treatment. Wasn't exactly that. Not exactly a apples to apples comparison, one may say. And people like to go to that one, too. Sources say medical professionals explicitly warned Rob and Michelle not to let Nick stay in the home until his medication was stabilized. And you can say that all you want, but if you provide 0 ways to actually exercise that warning, or just say, yeah, figure it out on your own, people aren't always going to figure those things out on their own. People don't always have the resources to get those things done. Now, Rob and Michelle, did they? Yeah, they. If anybody had the resources financially to hire basically a babysitter for Nick, it was them. Should they have had to? Did they? No. Do most people in these sort of situations? No. Even with the resources. Because there's good days and there's bad days. And they're human. And they've been through this with him their entire lives. And so far, he hasn't killed anybody. And for most people, that's good enough. Because the battle isn't usually he's going to kill somebody. It's usually he's going to do it to himself. And so far, we're keeping him alive. That's usually the fear. That's very likely what Rob and Michelle Reiner were thinking. A second source confirmed doctors told the parents the switch could trigger even more erratic behavior. Rob and Michelle let him stay anyway. They were his parents, and they were still trying to save him. They loved their son. And I'm not faulting them for that by any means. I have never been in a position that they have been in. I hope to God I never have to be. I cannot tell you how I would handle that because I have never been there, and I'm not going to pretend I would know. I can guess, but that's one of those where that mountain summit up there is so damn high and so far away, at least as parents, we hope it is, if there's no signs of this in our lives, And when we see it on the outside, someone else's struggles like this was. It's a summit way over there. It is a possibility that the path in life to which I tread down, could it lead me there? Could I end up being a parent where I have a child? Yeah, any of us who have children could end up there. We don't know where life is going to lead all of us. We can't predict the future. There are horrible things that happen in life. There are great things that happen in life. Sometimes we end up in summits we don't expect to get to. But I'm not going to pretend from this perspective over here that I can tell you what it's like to live over on that one. On December 13th, the night before the killings, Rob and Michelle brought Nick to a holiday party at Conan O'Brien's house. Sources say they brought him specifically to keep an eye on him. Two parents so worried about their adult son, they couldn't leave him alone for the evening. One guest said Nick was freaking everyone out, acting crazy, kept asking people if they were famous. Newsflash, everyone there is famous. Multiple sources say he got into a very loud argument with his father. He was asked to leave the party. Rob and Michelle told friends that night they were worried about their son's mental state. That was a Saturday night. The next afternoon, their daughter, Romy, found Rob and Michelle Reiner in the master bedroom of their Brentwood home. Rob was 78, Michelle was 70. Both had been stabbed to death. Nick was arrested that evening near the University of South Carolina, a California campus, miles from his parents' home, and charged with two counts of first-degree murder. The grand jury indictment that added lying in wait was returned on July 20th and unsealed August 12th when Nick pled not guilty. The defense is going to argue the medication change broke him. Sources close to the case have already described what happened as a complete break from reality. Alan Jackson, the defense attorney who initially represented Nick before withdrawing in January, said publicly that Nick Reiner is not guilty of murder. Under California law, that's the insanity defense. On paper, there's a version of this case where a medication change 3 weeks before December 14th sent a man with diagnosed schizophrenia into a psychotic episode he couldn't control. That's what the defense will argue. And then the jury will hear everything else. The prosecution's answer is lying in wait, concealment of purpose, hiding what you're about to do from the people who trust you, watching and waiting, choosing the right moment to act. A surprise attack from a position of advantage and specific intent to kill, not to hurt, not to frighten, but to end a life. Those four elements describe a sequence of deliberate actions, and every one of them requires a functioning brain. After 17 years of watching this man choose a path that served himself and destroyed everyone around him, the prosecution's allegation that he concealed his intentions and waited for the right moment doesn't sound like a legal theory. It sounds like the last choice in a lifetime of choices. Lindsay Clancy chose to have her children. She chose to see her doctors. She chose to take her medication that they prescribed. She chose to ask for help when she felt herself slipping. The providers changed her medications. The providers adjusted the doses. Clancy was cycling through prescriptions because the doctors kept trying new combinations, and Lindsay kept showing up to every appointment and taking every pill they gave her. She was the patient following their instructions, trying to be the mother she wanted to be while her brain was coming apart underneath her. She didn't destroy a guest house and laugh about it on a podcast. She didn't threaten her family. She didn't brag about what she could get away with. She didn't refuse treatment 18 times and choose the street instead. She sat in doctor's offices and said something is wrong, and the system she trusted couldn't get there fast enough. After she harmed her children, she tried to end her own life, an act consistent with someone whose brain had broken, not someone making a calculated decision. Nick Reiner made choices for 17 years. Lindsay Clancy spent months losing the ability to make them. One of those people has a record of choosing. The other has a record of suffering. The grand jury added lying in wait because prosecutors believe Nick Reiner was planning, concealing, and choosing on December 14th. Everything in his history says that's what he did. In every setting, with every person who tried to help him for 17 years. The question is defense, will have to answer is a question every person listening is already asking. When did this man ever stop choosing? So there you go. There's the difference. The next time somebody brings it up, they're just alike, aren't they? No. They're not. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. We will continue our conversation right there. If you've not done so yet, press subscribe to the podcast. The QR code is right there on the screen. Just scan it and go to Spotify or Apple Podcast. Hit subscribe or just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you get podcasts and press subscribe. All right. We appreciate that. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.